Hello,
Blog
welcome
Talk
to Small
Radio.
Market, Small Business. Are we there, Lisa? We had a technical problem, and let's see if we can get this thing going the properly way, all right? Lisa? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
I apologize. We had some sort of a technical problem. So forgive me for that. And let me welcome our listeners to Smart Marketing for Small Business. When we don't technically go down, I don't know what happened with the computer system. But let me just briefly give a overview to our listeners, and then let's get into interviewing you, Lisa.
Sounds great.
The show is Smart Marketing for Small Business, and its main objective is to give the listeners an opportunity to learn how they can outthink their competition, how they can be more effective, basically how they can be smarter. And we do that through guests like Lisa Robbins, who we're going to have on in just a moment. We have a blog, smartmarketingmoves.com. We have four LinkedIn groups, Smart Marketing for Small Business, Creative Thinkers Forum, Fearless Marketers, and Celebrity for Marketers, for Marketing. We have our site, Smart Marketing Group. The thing with the LinkedIn groups, I encourage people to go in, start discussions, participate in discussions. And if you have things that you would like to have us have on the show, our email address is marketingsmartly, SMARTLY, at AOL.com. And now I think I will shut up about that and let me introduce our guest this evening, a very enchanting woman named Lisa Robbins. And Lisa, why don't you briefly give a quick overview of what your business is about, your background, and then we'll get into some specific questions that people can learn from.
Sure. Well, I am known to some as the singing business coach, which doesn't mean that when I'm coaching with people I just break out in song. It means that I've found a way to combine the two things that I'm most passionate about, which is music and business, in a way that allows my clients to have a greater understanding of themselves and to build what I call a noble empire and live an inspired life. And I've been a business coach for about 8 years. I've been a musician for almost my entire life, and I just turned 40 this month, so I've been at this for a while. And what I found is, to some people, those two things seem like they're completely removed from one another, but in reality, they're just two facets of the same gem that is me, and I'm able to bring both of those talents to the table when I'm working with my clients, because most of the people who come to me are personality-based brands, and they're looking for a way to get their voice out into the world on a bigger scale, to spread their message, and the best way that they can do that is to really know who they are and stand confidently in that. And I wouldn't be doing my job as a coach if I didn't do that myself, and thus one of the things that I do is singing and getting up on stages, and so it makes sense then that if I'm going to be the model for my clients, I would have to do that as well.
All right, that sounds fascinating, but when we talk about personality-based businesses, for our listeners, what exactly are they? How do they differ from other businesses?
Well, a personality-based business is a type of business where there's a single individual who is the face of the business. This isn't a large major corporate conglomerate. You sometimes see a personal brand or a personality-driven brand. For example, Wendy's, when Dave Thomas became the spokesperson for the Wendy's brand. But that's not a personality-driven business. That's a major corporation with committees that make decisions. They're not typically very agile, whereas a personality-based business, oftentimes they start as solopreneurs. Maybe they grow a small team, but always that person who is the founder owner is the face of the business. They're the one that's out front. They're the Richard Bransons and the Oprahs of the world who are the face of the company. And when you think of the company, you think of them. They're inextricably linked. And that's a big differentiating factor in business.
No, that makes a very interesting point to intertwine. And I'm glad that you give that explanation, because when I looked at personality-based, I'm thinking, well, are we dealing with celebrities? Because I, for 7.5 years, the last 7.5 years of his life, was the business and personal manager of Smokin' Joe Frazier, the former world heavyweight champion.
There was
a business obviously built around him, but he had a huge personality known worldwide. But what you're speaking about is taking someone and creating a higher profile for them, interlinking them, locking them into it as it relates to their business. Am I correct?
Right. It's essentially, it's the celebrity of their industry, the celebrity of their area of expertise. The business is built around them. So Joe is an example. Absolutely. He's a personality-based brand. He's also very larger-than-life celebrity. And so celebrities can be personality-based brands, but not all personality-based brands are celebrities.
Well, when you talk about Dave Thomas at Wendy's, someone I'm familiar with, he was born in my hometown. And he's also, he was adopted. He was an orphan. And he was adopted in something. Yeah, and in fact, Wendy's has a program for adoption, promoting adoption. It's something I'm strong about because my daughter is adopted. We adopted her when she was 3 months old. She's now 26 and in law school.
Well,
what are some of the biggest stumbling blocks you find that these personality-based businesses run into? What do they face?
I'm so glad you asked me this question, because this, when personality-based brands can get this piece locked down, this is what I find is the thing that keeps them from really hitting their stride. And it's when they fall in lockstep with everyone and everything else, and they're not honoring what's true for them. And let me just give you an example. I've been a coach for about 8 years, and in that time, I've worked with a variety of entrepreneurs in a variety of different arenas. But one of the common arenas that I've worked in has been online marketing, information marketing, and there are a lot of people in that industry who fall lockstep into what I call guru worship. Some guru said, I should do this, and this is the best and fastest way for me to grow my business, and they're looking for a blueprint or a magic bullet or somebody else's step-by-step cookie-cutter blueprint plan, and it doesn't work for them. And they get stuck, and they trip up, and they don't understand. And I've actually had clients say to me, I've done everything that they told me I should do, and it's not working, and I don't understand why. And when we sit down and we look at it, they're not honoring what's true for them. Maybe they're more heart-centered than the business model that they've been given to follow. Or maybe they've got a more strategic approach than what they've been given as the shoulds. And essentially, they end up living in the shoulds or shoulding on themselves, as you probably heard the phrase. And what we do then is we step back and say, okay, if you could build this business your way, in a way that works for you, how would you build it? And, you know, you said at the onset of this interview, it's about, you know, thinking smarter or outthinking, you know, your competition. And it's that, but it's also really knowing yourself. When you know yourself incredibly well and you know what works for you and what will serve you, then you can show up for your clients in a more authentic way, and you can serve them in a way that's going to be a win-win. They love you because of who you are and what you have to offer, and you love them because they're paying you and they're a delight to work with. And it's that mutual synergy, that admiration and that respect and that getting the job done and getting the results that makes the difference. And, you know, I've said to clients, just because everybody else does it that way doesn't mean that's the way that it should be for you. You know, just because you're good at something doesn't mean that's the thing you're supposed to be doing. And sometimes it's a hard pill for people to swallow, but the idea is the more we get in tune with what really works for us, I mean, I've seen so many people out there in the world building businesses, doing some pretty crazy things, but there's an audience for it. There's a market for it that's willing to pay, and they're doing it. So if they can make money on YouTube playing video games and doing video game walkthroughs and make a good living doing it, I'm sure that you can find a way to do the thing that you love in a way that is sustainable and profitable for you. And that's
there's two points that come to mind. I'm a columnist for a thing called the Philadelphia Business Journal. And I would tell my listeners here to, if you Google Philadelphia Business Journal, Leslie Wolf, you will see some of the articles I've written. But one of those that I just wrote talks about, are you a mimic marketer? Do you replicate, duplicate, imitate rather than originate? And I have, over the years, in fact, about 6-8 months ago on LinkedIn, I put in one of the marketing groups a question. Why is it so many managers can't think outside the box? And the answers that came back often basically were afraid, fear.
Yep.
The fact is, there's a wonderful quote, and I'm a fanatic about quotes, but if you follow the crowd won't follow you.
Yeah.
And that's one of the lessons that people have to learn. Then you also talked about something. Are you familiar with the term the WIFM factor, WIIFM?
Oh, yeah. What's in it for me?
And that's what one of the things that many businesses don't understand is they have to talk from the perspective of the customer. That's what you were stating, is you have to, what turns the customer on? And it's,
right.
It's not just your personality, it's what message are you delivering that says, hey, this is going to be helpful to me.
Right, and along with that, I want to throw the caution out that if we're constantly bending our will to the flavor of the month market, then we're not showing up as ourselves, and that's when resentments and anger and frustration, especially for personality-based businesses, that's when it gets hard for entrepreneurs because they're wearing all these masks in their business and they can't just show up as themselves. So while it's important to listen to the market, it's also important to listen to yourself and find the common ground where what you love and what you're good at meets the market's demand.
Well, you know, you talked about creating a noble empire. Could you detail that a little bit more about what you mean by creating a noble empire?
Absolutely. I'm so passionate about this that I actually blogged about this on my website, but a noble empire is, at the core, a transformational business or organization that seeks to serve and is highly rewarded and highly regarded for that service. So if you're a business, whether you're a personality-based brand or you're a major conglomerate, it's about serving in a transformational capacity, and, you know, it's not about being a servant and being a slave to the business because you're highly regarded and you're highly rewarded. And I talk about these five tenets of a noble empire because so often we hear the word empire and we think of the evil empire. And I said, I want to re-envision this because I think you can have an empire that does good. I mean, we think about Camelot and those days gone by, and it's like we can actually have that kind of an experience now. In my hometown of Flint, Michigan, there was, at the turn of the 19th century into the 20th century, so 1905, 1920, there was a man named Charles Stuart Mott who moved into the community, and he came from New York, and it was part of the Mott, like the Mott applesauce, it was part of that family.
Sure.
And he left that part of the family because he wanted to be an engineer type, and he moved into our community, and he built his empire, but he didn't build it on the backs of his minions. This guy was so compassionate about our community that when the banks started to fail during the Depression, he actually went into his own pocket and pulled out $1 million, which was big, big, big bucks at that time, to bail the bank out. And people were so impressed by that that other investors from across the country ponied up their money to help cover the shortfall when he thought, hey, I've got $1 million, and everybody else kind of pitched in. And I'm like, where are the people like that in the world? And as I started to look around, I realized, you know, they're out there, but we've kind of put this negative spin on anybody who has wealth. And so I wanted to look at the idea of a noble empire that was founded on a higher calling. So that's the first premise, is that, you know, you're doing something that's bigger than yourself. This isn't just about the dollar bills. It's about how are you making a positive impact. And it's holistic. So there's this balance between work and play, and it's not built by any one person. Yes, Charles Stuart Mott was a leader in our community, but it took the hands of the working class and his colleagues to help turn our community into something great. And then, again, it's about service, not servitude. We're not being slaves to this greater vision or this empire. We're doing this because it means something to us. And because of that, it's also about connections. It's about creating that goodwill and recognizing that we can't do anything by ourselves for very long. We're interdependent and we need each other. And, you know, that's how business gets done, is with people. So that's what a noble empire is all about for me.
Yeah, and you hit a key point that a lot of people tend to forget. And that is, one person doesn't achieve everything. You build a team. And if you build a team, you have a situation where people feel they're part of it. They feel they can earn some of the rewards of it. They have the what I call the transparent communications channel, where they can tell you what's good, but they also feel free to tell you what's wrong, so that you're getting a perspective. It's like I often tell people, I'm the smartest marketing guy in the world. And they say, you are? And I said, yes, because I know how dumb I am. Because I can learn from other people all the time. And this is very important. We're going to take a short commercial because I want to talk about how do people reach you.
Okay, great.
You're the
best way to reach me is to go to my website, and that's lisarobinyoung.com. Robin has two B's. That's the easiest way to reach me.
Okay. lisarobinyoung.com. All right, that's good.
lisarobinyoung.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always want to give an ad in there wherever we can. But, you know, you're talking about people loving what they do and to get paid for it. You're pointing out the fact it really is realistic that you can do something that you have a strong emotion about. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there was a time in the world where it was all about survival and just keeping your nose above water. And so you had to keep your head down and your nose to the grindstone and do whatever job was put in front of you. And, you know, the industrial age in most of the world has come and gone, and we're in a place now where there's so much information, there's an abundance of access and ease of entry to so many different industries, and you can just create stuff. Like I said, I mean, my son loves to watch Minecraft videos on YouTube, and these people make videos day after day of them playing video games and just talking about them playing the video games. And with ad revenues on YouTube, they're making a living. Are they making tens of millions of dollars? No, but for so many people in the world, it's not about tens of millions of dollars. It's about finding a way to do something that's meaningful to them in a way that's helpful to others. And I tell you, my son enjoys watching those videos and learning new ways to navigate the Minecraft world. It saves him time. They make money doing it. It's really a win-win. And, of course, obviously, YouTube, as the venue that supports all of that, is making their fair share, too.
YouTube is amazing.
Yeah, and so if there's something out there that you really feel passionate and committed to, I am the first person to say, start exploring and investigating it, see what kind of a market is out there for it. You know, as a musician myself, that's one of those things where not everybody's going to like my music. Not everybody's going to like the message that I deliver. But my right people are out there, and it's my job as an entrepreneur to do my part to connect with those people and find that market and serve that market until the market tells me they want something new that I'm okay with.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, you have a book out. Is that an e-book, a hardcover? What is that?
It's available on paperback and Kindle. It's actually a bestseller on two continents. I can say that now. I'm so excited. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, you're selling a lot more than I do. I have an e-book out there. But tell me a little bit about the book. It's called The Secret Watch.
Yes. The Secret Watch is a parable for entrepreneurs. It's actually based on a concept that I developed a few years ago called The Five Key Areas of Success. And there's just a fascinating story about this book. It's semi-remotely autobiographical in that the story tracks an entrepreneur who went to a conference and was pinning all her hopes on getting all the clients that she could muster out of this conference. And when she comes home empty-handed and deflated, she meets a woman on an airplane who gives her this mysterious watch that it's a pocket watch, and so it opens once a day, and every day it opens with a new inscription to help her get a handle on defining success on her own terms. And for me, I was coming home from a conference, and I met the woman I call the crazy lady on the airplane, who she was riding in first class. I was riding at the back of the plane, and at some point while we're mid-flight, she comes trottling back to where I'm sitting, and she leans in on me, and she tells me, you need to write a book called The Secret Watch, and every second tells you something special. And I'm all for divine downloads and divine guidance, so I made a little note, and I thought she was there to use the bathroom, and she went right back to the front of the plane. I never saw her use the bathroom. And by the end of the flight, I had all 60 inscriptions outlined, and the book was basically written for me. And I went to her when I was getting off the plane, and I said, hey, I want you to know I got it done. And she said, well, it's going to be a bestseller. It's going to be amazing. I'm so happy for you. And I said, well, I need to give you credit. She's like, nope, it's totally for you. It's all for you. It was so overwhelming because, number one, getting gifts like that is very rare and not very common, but also because
that is true.
It opened this whole new pathway for me to be able to communicate my thoughts and my ideas. I had been a blogger. I had been a musician. I had been a speaker. I had been a coach. But the only books I'd ever written were workbooks. And so to have this story where this business owner has to make these decisions about, am I going to live the life that other people have told me I'm supposed to live, or am I going to do this the way that works for me, really opened a door for me in my business and with my clients to be able to say, hey, you know, it can be all about me, and that doesn't make me selfish. It can be all about me, and I can still do this in a way that serves people with meaning.
That's fascinating. So, again, the secret watch, and the thing is the five key areas of success. Can you briefly talk about what the five areas are?
Oh, sure. The five key areas of success, you want to think about like plates, spinning plates, okay? So there's five plates, faith, family, fitness, fortune, and freedom. Now, people have asked me, what about friends? What about fun? Well, for some people, fun falls into freedom, and for some people, friends are like family. And so those categories are loosely defined, but they're specifically defined by you. And that's the neat thing about these key areas, is because if you spend too much time focusing on any one key area, then, you know, just like spinning plates, if you stop spinning one of the plates, that plate's going to fall. And so it's about giving yourself permission to keep spinning those plates a little at a time every day or every few days, so that you're always putting some type of energy into your faith walk. And that doesn't necessarily mean religion or spirituality. It's what do you believe in? What are you doing that's greater than yourself? Family, however you define family, your sense of mental and physical fitness or emotional fitness. you know, fortune. That's the money stuff, but it's also how are you saving and investing and living a life of good fortune. And then freedom is just whatever it is that gives you a sense of freedom. And freedom isn't always fun. So, you know, sometimes you've got to, sometimes you have to do the hard work to experience a sense of freedom. And so that was one of the reasons why I'm like, I can't call it fun because it's not always fun. But those are the five key areas of success. And that's, you know, when I'm working with clients like that. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me ask you this because we're going to run out of time shortly. Tell me about, you know, you're a singer, all right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that work in your coaching practice?
Well, like I said before, I don't just spontaneously break out in song, but I'm in the middle of a project right now called the 300 Songs Project, and I'm recording 300 songs in a variety of genres, primarily pop-infused jazz and blues. And as a performing artist, I've made a point to pick songs that tell a story that you can then connect to the business realm. For example, Billy Joel just got the Gershwin Award, and one of the songs that they did at the benefit was Piano Man, which is, you know, his all-time most popular, most well-known song. And they had, I don't know, 10 or 15 people on that stage all singing his song, but in their own, you know, with their own voice, in their own style, in their own special way. And so for me, as a business coach, that's where I can take that song into my talks or when I'm working with my clients, and I can say, look, they can do it in their own way, and you can do it in your own way, too. So that's how it works.
How can people hear your music and learn more about you?
Oh, absolutely easy. Just go to my website. It's lisarobinyoung.com. That's where you'll find links to the 300 Songs Project. You can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is the same, Lisa Robin Young. And I try to make it easy for people to find me. So, but that's where you'll find links to the books and the music and everything.
Well, another thing is you can go up to our LinkedIn groups, and especially creative celebrities for marketing or fearless marketing, and please start a discussion. You know, anything, use what we have to your advantage is the key to it. And we have, as I said, smartmarketingmoves.com, a blog. We've got the four LinkedIn groups. And, again, anyone who's listening, if you want to get more information or want to, if you haven't jotted down the information on how to reach Lisa, get in touch with me at marketingsmartly@aol.com. Lisa, I really appreciated this. This was great fun. And
I had a blast.
Yeah, and let's see if we can do this again in the near future.
Sounds good.
I appreciate it. I know it's past your bedtime, so thank you for staying up and connecting with us.
Yep.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, bye-bye. And folks, that is what I call one talented lady.